So just sit comfortably for a bit, don't sit in your meditation posture. I'm going to talk for 20 minutes or so, if I can rein myself in, and then we're going to meditate again. So some of you have been here from the beginning, sounds like something biblical, doesn't it? Some of you have been here from the start of this seminar. So we started 2 weeks ago. And what I'm going to be doing tonight is a bit like you can have on an iPhone, you know, where you do that and you make the picture bigger. modern reference. I'm going to do that. So we've been talking about, we've been exploring the essentials of meditation, and I want to just see if I can just expand the view a bit and look in more detail at what we've, in a sense, already said. I think actually, we're only saying three things on this course. We're saying that, first of all, we need to imagine another kind of consciousness. That's where we're starting, is that Buddhist meditation is about discovering, uncovering another kind of consciousness, a new kind of consciousness. To discover, uncover that consciousness takes effort. And that new consciousness arises, as it were, in stages. It's not like a new consciousness in the sense of old consciousness, you lift a child over a gate and get to new consciousness. It's not like that. I don't mean like that. I mean that consciousness arises in a new way, in a deepened, more ascetic even way, a more fulfilling way, in stages, at least. Buddhism tends to talk about it in stages, and it's useful to look at it like that. So last week when I say we, I mean some of you, because I was on holiday. Anyway, we talked about the dhyanas, which I'll come back to tonight, which is one of the stages of a new consciousness arising. So I want to kind of just keep exploring, in a way, those three things. Firstly, this new consciousness. So, in a way, that's always the main thing I'm wanting to talk about. So, when we're meditating here, when you're meditating, you're trying to discover a new kind of consciousness that's distinct from you, but not separate from you. It's not anything to do with God, it's nothing supernatural. But this new consciousness can arise in such a way as to feel quite different from you. Eventually, this new consciousness can arise to such a degree that it starts to feel like this figure here, something majestical, something utterly calm, something radiating with beauty and majesty. So that's the first thing I want to try and see if I can explore a bit more tonight. So I started by this little story about how a child can't imagine adult consciousness. So, you know, I have little girls in my life, and when Alex was, I think, four or something like that, I remember we were in a cafe together. I think I was having a coffee, I don't think she was. and I said, as you do, I said, I didn't expect to have little girls in my life. And she said, I'm not little. And it really struck me, that little exchange. Because I was thinking, I never expected to have little girls in my life. It's a real change. I've got this whole life before. What she was thinking is, I'm being called little. So for her, the main problem was, I'm not little. She couldn't really imagine what I was talking about. I didn't expect to have little girls in my life. All she could think is, he's calling me little, I'm a big girl, I'm nearly four, I was little like years ago, So do you see what I mean? That when I said I didn't expect to have little girls in my life, she just says, I'm not little. And I can't say, no, don't you see, I've had this whole life before you, and for various reasons, some of you can guess, I didn't expect to have children, and you're one of them, and even though you're the oldest, you're actually, from the point of view of me, like really, really small. She'd be just saying, he's doing it again. I am not little. What is the problem with this? So do you see how I can't, even if I try to explain to her, no, but you see, I have a different kind of consciousness. I'm not trying to insult your size. And actually, littleness for me is positively charming, whereas for her, it's, you know, it's an insult. Because I'm saying that she's sort of a baby, and, you know, that's long ago, you know. She's far too sophisticated to be a baby. So I couldn't explain to her, I couldn't show her, that I have a different kind of consciousness. So do you see how that's true when we were four, and it's still true now? It's true for me now that there is a different kind of consciousness above and beyond mine, that if the Buddha, as it were, came in and said, I see things like this, I just say, I'm not little. I never expected to have little humans in my life. I just say, I'm not little. It's exactly the same kind of picture. And we're all in that position. We can't very easily imagine a consciousness beyond our current everyday consciousness. We're kind of, we might have little hints of a consciousness beyond our everyday consciousness. Probably that's one of the reasons why you're here. Certainly was one of the reasons I first came to this class when I was 25 or whatever it was, is because I had some sense of a larger consciousness. So I want to explore a bit more about how we might think about, or at least how I'm thinking about that at the moment. So what's been, I've just come back, relatively recently come back from a 4-month retreat in Spain, a long retreat in Spain where we had no contact with the outside world. It was really basically living as a monk for 4 months. And coming back, you know, obviously I looked forward to various things. I won't go through the whole list because it's not always very enervating. But I, you know, look forward to coffees and cinemas, and you can imagine the rest that I look forward to. Look forward to seeing the girls. What I've noticed very much coming back is all of those things that I looked forward to, yeah, they're fine, but they're not what I looked forward to. I don't know whether you have this, but I have this particular thing about cafes. There's a whole cafe culture in the East End. Apparently it's actually changing London economics, this cafe culture. It's changing my economics as well. Anyway, it's a kind of whole... And you sort of think, oh, what I really want is that cafe moment where I've got a coffee and a something, you know, some cakey thing. And somehow I was looking forward to that and being nice. I wouldn't be in this programme of activities. I could just sort of look out the window, write lyrical poetry and all that kind of stuff. And when you go to a cafe, it's never like that, is it? It's never the cafe you dream about. Something's never quite right. Like, you know, one time I went to the cafe, found this fantastic coffee. And just while I was waiting for it to arrive, I was sitting outside in the sun, it was perfect, but I needed to go to the loo. Then I was waiting for the coffee, so I ran down to the loo. By the time I got up, my seat in the sun had been taken. I had to sit up this sort of dark passageway. Never quite works, does it, that cafe thing? But in your mind, you've got this kind of glorious moment that you're going to have. I don't know, I hope not. I'm just not just talking about myself, I'm just thinking, sounds mad. So what's been striking me coming back is that from one perspective, I'm in the world, I fit the world. The world is what concerns me. I want cakes and coffee and films and a hug, and I want to someone to say a nice thing to me, the usual sort of stuff. I kind of fit the world and like the world. I went to see Mission Impossible. Very, very intellectual. very Schopenhauerian. I enjoyed it very much. You know, I fit the world and like the world, and there's this horrible sense that I don't fit it either. And that's what I've been noticing since I've been back, is it's like part of me fits the world and fits it neatly, if you see what I mean. But part of me, as it were, I don't like the language of parts, but let's use it for the moment, part of me just doesn't at all and can't fit the world. I wish it did. I wish I could just fit into the world and be perfectly happy with the world, that I never have been, and I rather suspect I never will be. I think this is not just me, I think this is our existential situation. That we are part of the world, we fit the world, but we're not part of the world, and we don't fit it. And both of those things are true, and they're in tension with each other. The time I find that tension most resolved in my life is when I'm on retreat. So I've just been on this 4-month retreat, as I say. Of course, when I was there, I was thinking what I want is coffee and cakes and cinemas and hugs and emails. But now I'm back, I think, actually, no, that was where those two things came together more, most even. So there's a part of me that fits the world and a part of me that doesn't fit the world. And I think that this fact goes to the very deepest nature of our experience. So whilst I was away, I was trying to reflect on, you know, this kind of thing. In one meditation, I was closing my eyes in meditation just as we were just now. And you know that sense that this is me. This is me, my existence. I live in this world through this body. This is me. And in my own mind, and in your own mind, I feel self-created. I feel wholly independent from things. I just, you know, it's like I'm miraculously born in a coffee shop. That I've just created myself. I think that's our core sense of ourself, is that this is just me. It's nothing to do with anybody else. I remember a while ago, I've a very close friend of mine, Amal Avadra, who I've known for many years, and I'd known him since he first came along to this centre. And then one retreat, his brother came, and his brother's only 2 years younger than him. And I went into the room, and for a moment I thought it was Amal Avadra. He had the same kind of gestures, the same sort of psychic sense in the room. And then it's not Amal Avadra, it's his brother, who I've never met before. And for a moment I had that weird, ooh, so who is Amal Avadra? Because he's like, really like this guy. You know, all the things that I've known for many years of a close friend that I've got to know and become friends with, quite a lot of that was also shared with somebody else. Do you see what I mean? So what can that mean? So this idea of being a unique individual, it's just an idea, isn't it? No way are you a unique individual, no way am I. And yet, in some way, I am, in a way that I can't understand. So in this particular meditation, I was remembering a photograph of my parents before I was born, when my mother first met my father. A lovely picture of them, they both looked very happy together. My father very proud, smoking, my mother looking slightly shy. In the midst of meditation, I felt very moved by, you know, that moment in their life before. I'm one of a family of five, until five teenagers appeared, or five under eights appeared. You know, we came out very quickly, as quickly as nature would allow. So seeing this picture of them before all that, I was sort of touched by it. But then you sort of think, hang on. So there's no me in that picture. There's no even thought of me. So I come out of that meeting between my mother and father, as we all know our biology. Don't need to talk you through it. If I do, perhaps after the class. So we all know that. So there's nothing about me that's anything to do with me. There's not a single atom in my body that I created. Not at all, is there? And there's not an atom in your body that you created. From one point of view, it's nothing. Your body has nothing to do with you at all. It's to do with two quite different people who think of themselves, like you, as quite separate and unique and self-born. And out of that meeting arises a you. But, you know, like once I was on a retreat a few years ago, and I coughed in the middle of a ritual, and I sounded just like my father. So presumably I've got the same shaped throat as my father. My hands look very like my father's. I've got my father's large ears, and so on. So there I am in this meditation, remembering, so this body that I feel is uniquely mine, that I live through, there's not a part of it that's me. It's not me at all. I didn't create any of this. And yet, I can't wiggle anybody else's toes in this room unless I, which is, I can't quite reach, but you know, unless I actually manually do it. So this isn't my body. From one point of view, this isn't my body at all. And your body isn't your body at all. No part of it. And yet, you're the only person whose toes you can wiggle. There's something going on about this body and this strange, unique sense of separation. So in this meditation, all I could feel is that that's really weird. You know, that there's nothing about me that is unique to me. In fact, there's nothing about me which is me. And yet I feel uniquely myself, separate. And yet I seem to live through this particular body, but it's not mine. And when you start to touch that, you start to feel this sense that whatever me is, whatever you is, runs from a person who can go and order coffee in a cafe, somebody who can send an email, cycle, ride a bike, all the way out to something you've no idea what it is. You've no idea what me is, that self runs quite beyond the world. And I don't mean that in a weird way, in a way. Just if you think about your experience just now, your self-sense, your sense of being alive just now, is utterly mysterious. I've been feeling it very strongly since I've got back from retreat, that it's like I'm acting a part and just about managing to pull it off. People don't notice the cracks. It's like I'm acting a part, and actually I don't know what's beneath that, underneath that. Yeah. I don't know whether I'm getting this across, but our self-sense runs off beyond the world. Even in things like dreams, imaginings, sometimes you have dreams that just don't fit in your life. Sometimes you have experiences that don't fit in your life. I think if we attend to our experience more deeply, you start to notice this more and more, that although in one sense I fit life, in another sense I don't at all. I am in the world, but not of the world. And I can't make sense of that. I keep on trying to be completely in the world, and that doesn't work. Or some people try spiritually to be completely out of the world, and that doesn't work. There's something about both, about being in the world and out of the world, that suggests that there's a new kind of consciousness that can contain and transcend that, and make sense of what is effectively kind of koan, a mystery. But how can I be in the world and out of the world? Do you get what you all think? What has he been smoking? this is only herbal tea, folks. So what makes that even more mysterious is that here I am talking to you, and of course as I talk about it, it does feel really spooky. Here I am talking to you, and here you are listening to me, and each and every one of us in this room thinks of themselves as the centre of the universe. Whatever this part of you in the world and part of you that goes beyond the world is, you think of it as basically being at the centre of the universe, that you're, of all the people's day, in the billions of people in the world, all the people's day today, the person you've been most concerned about is your day. I said to Alex the other day, what gives you meaning and purpose? And she looked at me and then she said, me. I thought, yeah, that's about right. Me, that's what gives you meaning and purpose, is that I am in the centre of it and everything is arranged around me. But you see how that's really problematic, isn't it? That you think you're the centre of the world, and just next to you, you think the centre, and just behind you, you think gentleman at the back thinks he's the centre of the world. So there's a problem here, folks, because I'm the centre of the world. And look, I've managed to pull it off for a minute because you're all looking at me. So I must be. And then painfully you all go and then you're the centre. You mean, so we can't all be the centre of the world, folks. And yet something's going on. There must be something in that. We experience the world, we experience everything from a unique position in time and space, at which we then range around all of our experience round as a pattern around us. And we all do that, but it can't be like that. The universe can't have billions and billions of centres of the world continually arising. It suggests to me, again, that there's another kind of consciousness that goes beyond the distinction of me being the centre of the world and you being the centre of the world. Do you see what I mean? That there's a problem there. And you can tell there's a problem because we get into antagonism because of that problem. Our sense of self, this weird, uncomfortable thing of being in the world and out of the world, makes us antagonistic with other people. Because I think I'm the centre of the world, in some subtle or crude way, I'm antagonistic to you being the centre of the world. Some people, they find it difficult when the centre is very full, when they come to the centre it's very full. It's partly just to think, it threatens your centre of the worldness, because people keep on jostling into the centre of the world. I remember recently trying to get onto a bus, and somebody knocked into me, and you know, I had that sort of indignant feeling, but they didn't knock into me, did they? They just knocked into someone. That's all it was. But you know when someone knocks into you, you think, no, you're knocking into me. But they're not knocking into you. They're not thinking, who shall I knock at? Ah, you know.
There he is.
Whack! Yeah, you know, they're just knocking into someone. And from their point of view, most of the people around them are just someones, just as it is in your point of view. If most of the people around you are just someones that you might knock into, like you might knock into a chair. But from their point of view, you're knocking into me, and I'm the centre of the world, and how can you possibly not realise that? Yeah? So do you see that this, whatever it is that's going on, which the more you even reflect about is very odd, suggests that we've misperceived what we are, that there is a new kind of consciousness that goes beyond these problems, the problem of other consciousnesses, the problem of the fact that we're in the world, but we can't quite fit into the world, and it's very frustrating. So the two things I want to sort of take us into the meditation with is that this feeling that we have, and I don't know whether you share it, of being in the world and not of the world, of something of you not quite fitting the world, of the world not quite fitting you. To see if we did fit into the world, there wouldn't be a problem. If it was fine just to go to a cafe and have a coffee, then go to work and then send your emails and come back and watch a bit of telly, have an early night with a book. If that was all we really wanted, that would be fine, wouldn't it? It would be fine. We'd fit the world. But we have this uncomfortable sense that we don't. Or if we do it, we don't fit the world for very long. Or even when we do feel like we fit it, we threaten not to. And this not fitting into the world, fitting, well actually it's more complicated, it's fitting and not fitting at the same time, makes us uncomfortable, makes us ongoingly uncomfortable. The Buddhist word for this is dukkha. It makes us feel uncomfortable, unsatisfied, incomplete, partial, that there's more somehow. So this sense of feeling uncomfortable because we're in the world and of the world, but also not of the world, is one of the main things we need to start to tune into in meditation, this sense of discomfort. And that can be literally a physical discomfort. It's just this sense of not quite being fully satisfied and comfortable, not quite being fully complete, either in the world or out of the world, that we're like straddled, weirdly. And that when you straddle something, it makes you feel uncomfortable. So one of the things we're trying to do in meditation is see whether we can be uncomfortable, because that's our real position. And only if we can feel the position we're really in, can we start to discover a new consciousness that goes beyond that position? Yeah. So that's the first thing I wanted to say about meditation, is let's try and experience directly, without thinking about it or analysing or telling a story about it, let's feel that this being human is a bit uncomfortable. Sometimes it's like horribly uncomfortable, sometimes it's just a bit annoying, a bit not quite in kilter. Yeah. So that's one thing I want to suggest, and I'll be exploring all this a bit more. I'll keep on expanding the picture as we go through the seminar. So then, that's the first step to a new consciousness, is to notice that this current consciousness that we have, just like a child's consciousness, this current consciousness we have fits the world and doesn't, and that makes us feel uncomfortable. So let's just try and feel that fact that we're uncomfortable in this life of ours. It doesn't quite fit. A bit of us keeps on poking out, yeah? And then let's try and cultivate a new consciousness. And the way to try and cultivate a new consciousness is to see if we can move to what Sinamana's talked about last week, move towards the dhyanas. The dhyanas are a new consciousness starting to arise, particularly in meditation. And what the dhyanas are is a consciousness in which that discomfort, that irritability almost, between fitting and not fitting, starts to feel a bit more resolved. It's not the end by any means, because if you remember, my third area that we're looking at is that consciousness keeps arising in a new way, in stages. Yeah? But the dhyanas are an important stage. So dhyanas are, Sinamana was saying that they're a bit like scuba diving. So, you know, ordinary consciousness is like wearing flippers and a funny headpiece. Makes you feel like, and you waddle down to the boat, and then when you jump off into the water, you've got this new kind of body, this new kind of awareness, this new kind of tactility even, the new aesthetic even. That's a good metaphor for the dhyanas. Sometimes metaphors are much more powerful than explanation. They're a relief, that's how I experience them, when I experience them, is they're a relief, and they're a relief from this sort of discomfort that sometimes is just on the edge of your experience, that you're a bit uncomfortable, and you can never quite fully get comfortable in this world, that because we don't fully belong here. If we did, folks, things would be fine. So the way to move into dhyanas is to look for two things, very simply, which we've already started doing tonight, and that is to look for calm and look for pleasure. Yeah, look for calm and look for pleasure. By pleasure, I don't mean anything like necessarily rapturous, we're just looking, on the lookout, for anything in our experience that might be pleasurable. So that might be, I don't know, just the fact that we're sitting quietly in a room with the lights turned down. It might be that you get distracted and you think about Mission Impossible. The man who plays the baddie lives near here, that's one of the reasons why I went to see it. You know, you think, oh yeah, I remember seeing him in the cafe. And you get a little pleasurable feeling, and then you just see if you can feel that pleasurable feeling, and that'll take you a little bit deeper into the meditation. It's the story about the pleasure, keeps you away, but if you can drop into the pleasure itself, that'll take you a bit deeper. So what you're looking for, first of all, in meditation, is calm and pleasure. Yeah? And you're trying to find a way of deepening into calm and pleasure, which is not the same as grabbing it. You start to feel a bit calmer, and you just see, can I just be a bit calmer still? Sinamana was just talking about just relaxing his arms more and more. Can I just be a bit calmer still? And is there any pleasure there? A little tiny bit. Can I just notice that pleasure? That's all I want to suggest for meditation at the moment. Next week I'll try and say a bit more. Yeah. But you see how we can't just talk about calm and pleasure because there's discomfort. So the way to calm and pleasure is to accept discomfort. Because discomfort is our human situation. Because we're straddled between the world and beyond the world. And that's not a spooky metaphysical spiritual thing. That's just your experience if you look at it honestly. You don't quite fit the world. I don't quite fit the world. I'm neither of the world nor quite in the world. Yeah. Okay. So that's what we're going to do. I'm going to lead you through another meditation, trying to explore, first of all, that discomfort, and then let's look for calm and pleasure.